Thank you very much for the invitation to give this talk. A cup of coffee. So the title of my talk is Torsion and Heterotic Geometries. So, and I will be talking about the construction of flux backgrounds for heterotic strings. So we are going to take the heterotic string, compactify to four dimensions, and fields that are going to acquire non-vanishing expectation values are going to be the metric. There is going to be a non-trivial dilaton, and there's also going to be a non-trivial three-form. While we are setting for simplicity, we are not taking gauge fields into account in this work. So why would we like to do that? Let me start with some motivation. First of all, generality. Well, it's simply the most general thing we can do. We give a vacuum expectation value to the metric, but we also want to give a vacuum expectation value to the fluxes. Then fluxes are interesting for phenomenology. Right, so fluxes play a prominent role when constructing models of particle physics or particle phenomenology. So flux backgrounds have mostly been studied in the context of type 2 theories. So for type 2 theories, or F theory, it has been shown that fluxes give rise to interesting features, like, for example, moduli stabilization. In the presence of fluxes, warp factors are generated, warp factors in the metric. So the warp factors provide one of the few known ways of maybe solving the hierarchy problem using string theory, or we can even use fluxes to break supersymmetry without inducing a cosmological constant, and so on. Now, the heterotic string, on the other hand, is a natural setting for building realistic models of particle phenomenology. So the approach taken in the past is to say, well, we take the heterotic string, compactify on a six-dimensional Kähler space to four dimensions. And this has been very successfully used to construct models in four dimensions that realize gut gauge groups, like E6, SO10, and SU5. Now, the problem with all of these models is that they suffer of the moduli space problem, right? So there are all the scalar fields that do not have a vacuum expectation value. So it suffers from moduli space problem. Well, it's then natural to try to include fluxes also on this side over here to maybe achieve all of this interesting thing that we were able to do for phenomenology on the type 2 side, and maybe even go beyond that. So the third reason why it's interesting to include flux for compactifications of heterotic strings is that it's more likely that we may be able to find a worksheet description for flux backgrounds in the context of heterotic strings. So worksheet description. So let me compare the type 2 sides and the heterotic sides again. So on the type 2 side, we know that fluxes stabilize moduli fields, but usually, conventionally, one of the fields that is not stabilized is the size, and we take good advantage of this. We make the size very large, and this is the reason why we can apply the supergravity approximation. Right? So we say the size of the internal space is going to be large, so supergravity is going to be reliable. However, if we would like to compute quantum corrections to this background, then we are a bit more in trouble because all of these flux compactifications involve Ramon-Ramon fluxes. And we have, as we have learned in the first part of this program, describing Ramon-Ramon backgrounds on the worksheet is difficult. So Ramon-Ramon backgrounds. Are difficult to describe. To describe on the worksheet. So it's still not known how to do this. But even if we would achieve this, even if we would know how to construct such a worksheet description, we could still be in trouble because fluxes, one of the fields that is usually stabilized is the axial dilaton, right? So tau b is stabilized by flux. So, and the string coupling constant usually turns out to be of order 1. So even if we would have this worksheet description, it's not clear if we will be able to compute quantities in a perturbative expansion in the genus of some worksheet like this. Now, on the heterotic side, things are much brighter because all we have is Nevers-Schwarz flux, heterotic. So all we have is Nevers-Schwarz flux, and the string coupling constant actually turns out to be a tunable parameter. So we can make it as small as we want. Gauss is going to be small, so we can make it as small as we want. And so whatever, if we are able to describe the background in a certain regime, maybe large base, small fiber, something that I'm going to explain a little bit later, still, if we would like to compute corrections to this background, we have a chance of doing it over here because we have some chances of maybe being able to construct a conformal field theory to describe this, while the site is much more difficult. So we have a better chance, let's say it this way, better chance of finding maybe a conformal field theory to describe this side. All right.
So can I ask you now? So at the end of the day, how will GS be stabilized? At the end of the day?
Non-perturbative effects. So first of all, we want to make sure that these backgrounds actually exist. So we are happy to have it as a free parameter for now. If at some point you would like to stabilize it, you can use non-perturbative effects, string worksheet instantons in this case.
So that's theoretical, or people actually know the mechanism?
Oh, that's theoretical. I mean, that's something that I'm not even going to address. So at this moment, so my only point is right now to make sure that there's actually a framework that we could use to describe this background. So that's what I won't say anything about stabilization of the Dilaton. Okay. So my talk is based on two papers. So the first one that has the same title as the talk that I'm writing with Saf City. It has the same title, and the second one that I'm writing with a group of students. So it's myself, it's Chris Bertinato, Yuxi Chung, and Guan Yugu. So, and the title of this paper is Supersymmetry Breaking Heterotic Strings and Fluxes. So, and both of these papers should be done pretty soon. Now, in the first paper, what we did is to construct a large new class of flux backgrounds for heterotic strings, so that are quite new. In the second paper, what we did is to study flux backgrounds that have also already been described in the literature. So, as I'm going to describe, so these are backgrounds which are T2 vibrations over a K3 base. Over a K3 base. So, and the novelty over here, the new results are that we found solutions which break supersymmetry completely, and that we are able to show that all constraints, this background satisfies all constraints to solve the equations of motion, which means that particularly in solutions with n equal, so for solutions that preserve an n equal to 2 supersymmetry, we are going to see that supersymmetry variations are satisfied and the Bianchi identity is reduced to a differential equation of Laplace type. So as opposed to a nonlinear differential equation, which could in principle arise from the Bianchi identity, and I will describe this in detail. Okay, let me actually, I want to write up an overview and leave it on the blackboard, so I will erase this side and leave it on the left. Okay, so overview. So the first part is the motivation, and that's luckily over already. Now, in the second part, what I want to do is to spend just a few minutes setting up the notation. So I want to review the form of the low energy effective action, low energy, energy effective action of heterotic strings in 10 dimensions. So I want to say, so the reason I want to do that, because I want to state clearly which equations I'm going to solve and to which order in alpha prime, so that we all know what I will be talking about. So then, of course, the equations that I want to solve are going to be, so most of the backgrounds are going to be supersymmetric. So delta Fermi is equal to zero at the Bianchi identity. Now, the backgrounds are no longer Calabi-Yau spaces, and we need some kind of inspiration to know what are we looking for, so what kind of background are we going to find. So I will present some new class of solutions that follow from string duality. And we are going to see that the string duality has limitations, so there will be backgrounds that go beyond those obtained from the duality chain and beyond. So I will describe in detail a torsional type 1 background. And then I will discuss the spaces that are torus vibrations over a K3 base. And I'm going to explain what I mentioned a moment ago about the solution of the Bianchi identity. And then I will mention some conclusions. And hopefully I can do all of this in time. Okay. So let me start with point number 2, so the low energy effective action. Of the heterotic string in 10 dimensions. So in the 10 dimensional string frame, there's an action for the heterotic string that we all know. So there's going to be a dilaton. We have an Einstein-Hilbert term, a kinetic term for the dilaton. -1/2. So curly H is going to be the heterotic, the flux on the heterotic set. Then there is a gauge field. I'm not going to take this gauge field into account for this talk. Here is one contribution that is interesting for us. It involves two Riemann tensors. And the rest is order alpha prime square. So this correction over here involves two Riemann tensors, and it has a peculiar property, namely, it's constructed from a connection that is not the conventional spin connection, but it's what is called the BH connection. And that's going to be very important. So during this talk, I will be using two connections that I'm going to call omega plus minus, which are given in terms of the spin connection, plus minus 1 half h a b m. Now, h is given in terms of a 2 form of a B field. H is equal to dB2, a 2 form, and there are the Chern-Simons 3 forms that we have to add. So there's a gravitational piece. Again, it's constructed from the omega plus connection, so that is omega plus h, and there is the gauge field. Now, since h is given by this expression, we take the derivative and we obtain the Bianchi identity that we are going to solve in detail later without taking gauge fields into account. All right, now, I mentioned this choice of connection over here, so this is going to be very important because of the following. So this is the these are the bosonic fields. Now, there are supersymmetry transformations acting on the gravitino. Now, so this supersymmetric transformation receives corrections, but only to order alpha prime square. There is a dilatino, d slash phi minus 1 half h times epsilon, plus, again, order alpha prime square, and a gaugino, again, we don't take gauge fields into account. Now, what singled this choice of connection over here out is we could, in principle, if we wish, try to solve this Bianchi identity with a different choice of connection. This is always possible. And then we would be redefining the three form on the left-hand side. But then at the cost of having supersymmetry variations, that would have a correction to order alpha prime. So what singled this choice of connection out is that all corrections to supersymmetry transformations are order alpha prime square. And that's the choice that we are going to do during this talk.
So, with that action, you take that connection with the Bianchi identity, otherwise the additional interactions in the.
Well, over here, right? So, if you take, you can, for example, so shifting this object, right? So we can, for example, construct this. You say you have, for example, a spin connection plus any different connection, right? So we can always write this as trace R of omega, which R of omega, and then plus D of a Chern-Simons 3 form that I don't want to write up. And we can always redefine, for example, H if we want, by including this part on the left-hand side because it is derivative of a 3 form. We can do that, but at the cost that if we look at the supersymmetry transformations, this, for example, involves H, right? So this is omega minus, which would be omega minus H. So we would have to change that supersymmetry transformation, and this background would be corrected to order alpha prime. Okay.
Yeah, that's crucial because people have been messing up this for
30 years in the literature. Okay, whatever. So what do we find if we solve the, so what we want to solve is, of course, so these two conditions. We want to solve supersymmetry and we want to solve the Bianchi identity, right? So those are the equations that I'm going to solve to this order in alpha prime. So or until order alpha prime. So what can we find if, for example, if h is equal to 0, right, so then we know the solutions. We can have, for example, Calabi-Yau three-folds. We can have spaces that are K3 times T2. So that's boring, but we know how to do. If h is non-vanishing, on the other hand, then the spaces are no longer Kähler. Right, so there's still a globally defined two-form. And the deviation from Kählerity, so there is a globally defined two form J, but it's not closed. And the deviation from Kählerity is measured by H, right? So each time we include H, it's going to be non-Kähler. So since it's non-Kähler, there are no nice algebraic geometry methods available to describe the spaces. So we need a different way to describe it, and the best we could do is to describe them with an explicit metric. So we will describe the spaces. We will describe spaces. With a metric. All right. So that was point number two. What I want to do now is to go to point three and construct a new class of solutions that follow from duality, and then we will see how we can go beyond duality. Those exempt that follow from duality. So, and what I want to do is to write up or to paint a cartoon of the duality chain, and then say a few words about each of the steps in this duality. So, three solutions from string duality. Okay. So the starting point is going to be the oldest example of flux background, so M3, on elliptic Calabi-Yau fourfold. Then this is dual type 2B on Calabi-Yau oriented fold. So this is only a sketch. And I'm going to say a few more words about each step in this duality chain in a moment. T-duality along the fibers transforms this into a background for type 1. And the further S-duality transforms this into a background for the terotic string. Okay, so let me say a few words about each of the steps. So over here we start with M3 compactified on an elliptic Calabi-Yau space. So we have some kind of base. Let me call this B6, and we have some torus that varies over the space, right? So this torus is going to have a certain complex structure tau. Now, by shrinking the volume of the torus to zero, we transform this into background for type 2B. So we obtain 2B on B6. Now, the complex structure of the parameter, the complex structure of the torus is then identified with the string coupling constant. On this side, we will assume that the Calabi-Yau fourfold has a non-singular oriented locus, so that we up to SL, jumps by SL to Z, we can set this equal to constant, and B6 is going to be non-singular. Non-singular. Okay, now we include, if we want, so what we are going to do is to include flux on this side.
For, that's in node 3 or node 7?
That's going to be an O3. Okay. Now, so.
Hold on.
O7, sorry, excuse me.
Are you thinking of B6 as some Calabi-Yau which has been acted upon?
Okay, all right, just one second. I'm getting there. Okay, so I'm going to describe this fellow in a moment in detail. So we include flux here. Then for from flux, it has to satisfy a few conditions in aura, so I'm not going to list them all. In aura for the background to be supersymmetric, and we obtain three form flux on this side that is given by a sum over Ramon flux and Neverschwarz flux. Now, so the complex three-form flux is imaginary self-dual. Okay, I'll just squeeze it in here. It's imaginary self-dual, and so a different way of writing this that I actually like much better is that the Ramon flux is actually dual. So just taking, just taking the real part of this equation, which says that the Ramon-Ramon flux is actually obtained from the Navier-Schwarz flux. So sometimes one hears comments like, for example, for heterotic strings, one cannot achieve moduli stabilization in the presence of flux because there's only Navier-Schwarz flux, there's no Ramon-Ramon flux. Well, that's sort of an illusion because even in type 2B, the Ramon-Ramon 3 form is once H3 is chosen, so F3 is sort of determined. So there is, for heterotic strings, there's as much flux as is needed in order to achieve moduli stabilization. So it's sort of a similar story. So let me describe in more detail B6 to answer Ruben's question. So let me say a few more words about the orient default locus over here. So the way to describe this B6 is to start with an elliptic Calabi-Yau space, Calabi-Yau 3M. So since it's elliptic, I can describe it in Weierstrass form, x cubed plus f. So there are some base coordinates, and f and g describe the elliptic vibration, a torus varying over some base. And so these are the base coordinates. And f and g describe the choice of elliptic vibration. Now, so there is an involution I that inverts the fiber, so it sends y to minus y. So this acts as a reflection of the fiber. All right. So the background one actually obtains from M theory is not a compactification on M, but a compactification on M modded out by by a Z2 action. Z2 is oriented default action minus 1 to the FL times Wachit parity times this reflection of the fiber, and B6 is then identified with M divided. So B6 over there is then identified with that Calabi-Yau space modded out by I. All right, so. So that's the background on the type 2 side. So then what we do is a duality. So this duality chain is not new, so I'm going over this real quick. So then what we do is T duality in the fiber directions. And in that way, so T duality on the fiber, what it does is it sends the orient default action simply to omega, so one is left with type 2b modded out by omega, which is a background for type 1, and the further S duality transforms this into background for the heterotic string. Okay, so in principle, we have all the ingredients set up to obtain a large class of torsional backgrounds, right? So, for example, in type 2B, we can construct many Calabi-Yau spaces. So we have many flux backgrounds on this side. We can choose H3 and F3, and then we could, in principle, construct type 1 and heterotic backgrounds. So the only problem is that the form we are given this background is like this. So this is not very useful, and what we actually need is a metric. Okay, so what we need is a flux. We have it pretty explicitly, but to apply Boucher rule to do T-duality, we need a metric. Okay, so the metric for the type on the type 2B side looks in the following way. So since we have flux,
The B6 you get is that a P1 vibration? Is that what you
said? So in principle you can take any elliptic Calabi-Yau space like this, right? So and then you have to mod out by so this works for any elliptic Calabi-Yau space.
But you factor by minus one on the elliptic fiber, so yes. Down on B6 that becomes a P1.
The what?
On B6, yes. The image of the elliptic curve is a P1, which is divided up by minus one.
All right, so we need a metric. So the metric on the type 2B side, since So there's going to be a warp factor. Right. So since we include flux, so this is a warp factor. And the internal space. So we have the metric of on the Calabi-Yau space. Now, so of course nobody knows how to write down the metric for a Calabi-Yau space, right? But so there is actually a metric, the one we are going to use, that is good enough for our purposes. It's what is called the metric in the semi-flat approximation, and it's a very good approximation to the metric of a Calabi-Yau space, and it actually has exactly the isometries we need in order to apply the duality chain. So in the semi-flat approximation.
Catherine, are you assuming that the entire tadpole anomaly in M-theory is canceled by flux, or are there some implicit brains in the background as well?
So this is canceled just by flux. I don't need it. Yes.
You have to have a big flux.
I need a big flux, yes.
And so also the chi of the fourfold is divisible by 24.
Exactly. So I assume that the type of cancellation condition is satisfied, right? And also I got...
Without brains it is, no?
No, no. If you have flux, it's not necessary. I mean, the flux, you can have a flux cycle which does it.
And I actually even can go beyond that statement that you say... So what you're asking about is the integrated equation, right? So, but you could ask, so is this, for example, the local equation satisfied? It could, for example, not be clear. There, it's important to realize that this is an equation of Laplace type. So there is, for example, a contribution that could become highly nonlinear, the r to the 4 term, right? But it turns out that this is conformal invariant. So it's an odd theorem by Chern and Simons that Pontryagin classes are always conformal invariant. So they are not going to see the warp factor, and all you will ever solve is a Laplace type equation over there. Good. So we need the metric over here of the elliptical Calabi-Yau space. So in the semi-flat approximation, the metric of an elliptical Calabi-Yau space.
Catherine, of course, the semi-flat approximation will get corrected.
I'm getting there.
And then you're still going to have the isometries?
I'm getting there. That's exactly. Let me write this up, and I'm going to address that point in a moment. Okay, so we have the semi-flat approximation, and we have a metric. So there's going to be a Kähler base. Now, so this is a metric. So this is a semi-flat approximation works actually for a Calabi-Yau n-fold. So it's not. We are going to use it for a Calabi-Yau three-fold, but this works for a Calabi-Yau n-fold. So there's going to be a torus that is fibered over a Kähler base. So this space is Kähler. So that's important. Now, this is called semi-flat because this parameter tau, the complex structure of the torus depends only on the base coordinates. Now, so this space is Ricci flat and Kähler if tau is a holomorphic function of the base coordinates, and if the Ricci form of the base is related to the tau parameter of the torus according to this relation, or since the base is Kähler, I can simply say del bar det log Pij bar minus log tau 2 is equal to 0. So these two conditions guarantee that this metric is Ricci flat and Kähler. Now, we can apply this for a Calabi-Yau n-fold. So again, we are going to use this metric for a Calabi-Yau three-fold. If we use this to describe K3, then this is known as a stringy cosmic string metric. Now, so what's interesting about this metric? Interesting is, for our purposes, is it's a metric that we can work with because it has U1 times U1 isometries. So that's exactly what we need in order to in order to apply this duality chain to obtain the background on the type 1 side. But as Greg said, for this Calabi-Yau spaces, of course, do not have this U1 isometry, so they must be broken somewhere. And the reason they are broken is the Tausa holomorphic parameter of the base. So there will be somewhere singularities. And then close to the singularities, we have to repair this metric, and it is exactly this repairing that is going to break the U1 isometry. So close to the singularities, these isometries are broken. This is understood how it works for K3. So in that case, this semi-flat metric is repaired close to the singularities by what is known as the Gurian buffer metric. For Calabi-Yau three folds, it's not known how this works. So nobody knows how to repair the singularities. Now I should mention at this point, even though it's not relevant for this talk, that so this is the metric in the semi-flat approximation where the complex structure of the torus varies over the base, but there is a generalization of this metric which includes two holomorphic parameters. Namely, we would also allow the size of the torus to vary over the base, and then there is a second holomorphic parameter that I call rho equal to zero. So rho is equal to rho 1 plus I rho 2. Rho 2 would appear over here in the metric, and rho 1 would be a B field with two components in the fiber directions, but that's a different story that I don't want to get into. So all we need is the solution with 1.
I'm still confused,
yes.
Because the metric that you will lose those isometries.
Exactly.
How can you do the T-duality?
Exactly. So what I want to do now, since there will be so close to the singularities, we will not be able to do the T-duality. There will be corrections on the type 2B side. The metric is going to be corrected somehow, but those corrections cannot be traced for the duality. So we have to correct them independently in the type 2B side and on the heterotic side.
I see. So you say there's still going to be a T-duality even though you don't have the isometries to justify it.
What I said is I'm going to try. That's a very old idea. SYZ used it extensively, so don't blame me on this. Okay, so what I'm going to do is to take this, right, and I'm going to map it to the type 1 side. And once I'm on the type 1 side, I can think about how to lift my singularities. I don't want to think about getting back to type 2B anymore. These are the solutions that cannot be traced through duality back to type 2B. But let me first get there.
I mean, you can write down this metric, which has these approximate geometries. Why is it the case that this is an approximation to the real Calabi-Yau metric?
To the what?
I mean, is it obvious that the real Calabi-Yau metric has to be close to this one?
The compact Calabi-Yau does not have isometries.
Doesn't have.
The real metrics are also singular.
Yeah, but I'm saying that.
In each case, it's been proven that there's a limit in the space of Kähler metrics, which approaches the semi-flat metric. In the higher dimensional case, that has not been proven.
So it's not clear. So there is it's non-trivial that this is a good approximation.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yes. Good. So I'm collecting data over here that I want to put on the side. So we have we have a metric now on the type 2B side that is good enough for us to work with. Then we need to put the flux in a form that we can use it for the duality chain. So flux in type 2B. Since we are in type 2B, we are going to have some Navier-Schwarz free form. There's going to be different Ramon-Ramon fluxes, so there's going to be a free form, there's going to be a phi form, an axial dilaton given by the Ramon-Ramon zero form plus I e to the minus phi type 2B. Okay. Now, so we are modding type 2B out by this C2 action. So both H3 Let me simply denote this with small f. So f3 is odd, so under the action of minus 1 to the fl times omega. This means that both free forms have to be odd under the inversion of the fiber, which means simply that they have to have one leg in the fiber direction. So I can write my flux as h3 is equal to hw1 dw1 plus HW2, DW2. So HW1 and HW2 are going to be two forms on the base. The same for the Ramon-Ramon 3 form. Okay.
Is that the closed F3 or the... Which F3 is that?
What?
Which F3 is that?
Which F3? I only have one. So
Is it the one that DF equals... That's closed,
is
the one that's...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so that's the one that's not closed. So it involves, so there's H, NS, and there is... Okay. Yeah, so Fn is equal to DC plus H, which is C, right? So that one. Okay. All right, so now we have sort of all the data we need on the type 2B set. And, now we have all the data we need on the type 2B set. So what I want to do is to perform those t-dualities and then get to point 4, to the form of the torsional type 1 solution. All right. So again, the solution is going to be complicated because we have to work with a metric, but again, that's the best we can do at this moment. And I should also add on a note of caution. Namely, we are going to torsional type 1 solution. Oh. So... unfortunately, I just erased. Okay. So there is this metric, and it has a holomorphic parameter, and in general, there will be singularities. So we do not want to t-dualize along singular fibers. So the t-dualities that I'm going to perform work rigorously only if we can choose tau to be constant up to jumps by SL2Z, and the base of the Calabi-Yau threefold is non-singular. So we are going to require the Calabi-Yau require the Calabi-Yau three to have non-singular oriented points. So
going back to the original fourfold, that means that you had assumed that it has some kind of double elliptic vibration.
Yeah, right. So I'm going to give up this condition in a moment. So the game we are going to play is we are going to construct the solutions where tau is constant up to jumps by SL2Z. We are going to construct the solution, but then we will see that once we are on the type 1 set, we have our background, we are going to let tau vary again, and we are going to check our equations. So by symmetry transformations and Bianchi identity, we go through all the exercise again, and then we are going to see that it still works.
And so that orientable plane could be either plus or minus type, or you're not telling us what the flat B field?
At this moment, I'm not telling you the details. So it's not that I'm not going to describe a concrete example of this. So this is in general the strategy, but that would be very interesting to do.
So you don't know if it's going to
be? So at this moment, I don't know.
In fact, you can't know because you haven't told us anything about the... You've only told us about the field strength of the B field.
Right. Okay. All right. So this means the Calabi-Yau threefold will be a vibration. So the Calabi-Yau threefold is vibration or T2 vibration over a base that can be either K3 or one of the Hilzebruch surfaces, n is equal to 0, 1, 2, and 4. Okay. So, and then...
It would be K3, right? Otherwise, it wouldn't be Calabi-Yau.
Well, you have enhanced supersymmetry in this case. So then you have a different, so if it's K3, then you have more supersymmetry.
Okay, sorry.
So I'm just including it because it does, it's the same formulas, just replace the base. Okay, so now things are sort of in a form that we can apply Boucher roots and we can explicitly construct the background. So again, the way I'm going to present this is as a metric. Okay, so the type one metric. So here we go. We have a warp factor. We still have our base. And we have the fiber. So now there is the warp factor, the type 2B warp factor appears in front of the fiber. Plus a potential AH. Now, so the way this potential is constructed is so on the type. So let me explain what this object over here is. So so the way we construct this potential is the following. So we start with a Navier-Schwarz flux on the type 2B side, and there are these two components of H, HW1. So these are two forms. And we are going to construct a combination H2, which is equal to HW2 plus tau HW1. And locally, we are going to write this two form, so we can always do this locally since it's closed, as the derivative of a potential. So for the case that tau is constant, which is what I'm considering right now, so AH would be given by BW2, which is now a one form, plus tau BW1. Now, so this means that if we start on the type 2B side with a background that involves Navier-Schwarz flux, it mixes with the metric, and it mixes with the metric in this particular way. Now, so what makes this combination over here of this component of the B field special? What is special about it is that it transforms under SA to Z of the fiber in the same way as the first part. So we, of course, have to construct this metric consistently, and this one form transforms under SA to Z in the same way as the first contribution over here.
So you're doing T-duality around both circles, right?
Yes.
Is that combination that you have there globally defined on the K4?
Yes. Yes. Good. Now, so that is actually something that I want to explain, and that actually has very, very interesting consequences, namely, this two form, let me glance over the idea. I wanted to explain this a little bit later, but let me mention it now. So you could, in principle, say you have a background like this. Let's forget the type 2B side and say you have a metric on the theoretic side and you want to know how to include flux, right? So then you can include a one form over here and you construct a two form H2. Now, so this form H2 needs to be a non-trivial form on the base over here. Now, once you write it as this potential over here, in order to get a metric that is globally defined, so this two form is going to be non-trivial on the base, but it will be trivial on the entire torsional space. So the topology of the space is going to change. That's something that you can easily see if you have, for example, a Neel manifold. So you can. So it's exactly the same thing. You have a base, a T2 base. And once you include the twist of the fiber, so then this thing is so the derivative of this is going to become exact. And so the topology is changed by this. That's for sure. All right. So that's the metric, and then there is flux. And so the formula is not very pretty.
The one form that you have written there, the d omega plus connection potential, does this jump under tau or not, the full thing?
Under SL to Z, yeah. It jumps under SL to Z and we can paste it together. And so it jumps in the same way, right?
Okay.
right, now, so we still need flux. So there's
a... it transforms into itself over C tau plus D squared? Or is there some... That's what you mean when it jumps in the same way.
So what it does is...
Yeah, so the combination in between these the vertical bars goes to itself under C tau plus D squared?
Yeah, C tau plus D. That's exactly what it does. Okay, so there's the three form. On the type 1 side, again, I mean, that's a matter of sitting down, applying Boucher rule, so nothing really fancy, really down to earth. So the Nevers-Schwarz flux on the type 2b side appears in the metric, and the Ramon-Ramon flux from the type 2b side appears in the type 1 3 form. And let me explain my notation. -4a. So again, so this is same notation as I used for the Nevers-Schwarz flux. So F is FW1 DW1 plus FW2 DW2. This over here is simply the field band in the fiber direction. So EW is equal to E to the A divided by square root of tau 2. dW2 plus tau dW1 plus AH. And there is a dilaton related to the warp factor. So these are all the fields that I need to specify to A. Okay, so these are, so we have on the type 1 side, we have a metric, we have flux, and we have a dilaton. Okay, so again, we are still assuming tau is constant, so what can we do? We take this this fields, we plug it into the supersymmetry transformations, and yeah, it solves. So I probably can already erase this.
You're basically saying that the delta, like the warp factor, is now the dilaton.
Yeah.
In some sense, like the warp factor measures an extra dimension of the.
No. Yeah. Maybe. Okay. So. Okay. So what can we observe from those fields? Well, they also. Delta Fermi is equal to zero, right? So supersymmetry conditions on the type 1 side are just a repackaging of the supersymmetry conditions on the type 2b side. So while on the type 2b side you say you have a Calabi-Yau threefold and you add flux to it and then you check your supersymmetry transformations, here sort of you do the same thing except that the flux now comes repackaged in different data. For example, the Nevers-Schwarz flux is gone because we are in type 1, but it appears in the metric again. If you check supersymmetry transformations and compute the spin connections, so then H appears once again the same way it appeared on the type 2b side, while the Ramon-Ramon form appears from the three form flux in type 1. Now, so delta Fermi is equal to zero solved is our repackaging of type 2b Suzy constraints. Now, so we have assumed tau is constant just to be on the safe side to perform the dualities, but even if tau is not constant, right, and it may have some singularities. Even if tau is not constant, we can take this background and we can check supersymmetry and it solves. Now, again, if tau is not constant, there will be singularities that one has to cure, of course, right? But those, so one has to replace the metric close to the singular fibers by a new metric that we can no longer trace back to type 2b. So in that moment, the solutions will be just, will just exist on the type 1 side, and we cannot trace those back anymore.
Can I ask which tau is being discussed right now? We had an elliptic fibration over a threefold, and then the threefold was elliptically fibered over a surface. That tau is from the elliptic fibration under the surface, right?
Exactly.
And this tau is from the threefold.
No. Oh, sorry, I should have clarified, too many taus. This tau over here comes from the elliptic vibration over a surface, exactly. So that's the type 2b, so from the Calabi-Yau threefold. So tau b is the axial dilaton.
And that's the one that you were...
No.
That you were assuming was constant.
This is constant, I'm gone from the very beginning, I should have said that. So that is constant, right? Now I'm talking about this object over here. Having
so if that is constant, yes. There's no issue about the SL2Z transformation.
If that is constant, there's no issue, right? If that is constant. However, if it's not constant, then there's an issue. And I think I explained that, right? Okay, sorry, then there was some misunderstanding. So this over here, to perform the duality, we assume, and in this case, so if that thing is constant up to SL2Z, right, so then we have the space over here. So here...
That's a very stupid question. If you have this double elliptic vibration and you fix both SL2s, does it make it a T4 vibration over four-dimensional base?
Over, yeah, sure.
So effectively, the double elliptic fiber is just being treated as a pair of T2s.
No, different things are being done with the T2s.
Yeah.
In this case. I mean, you wanted them to pick an F. If you had a general T4 vibration instead of a pair of T2 vibrations, you wouldn't be able to take an F theory limit before doing this T1.
Well, T4, I mean for commuting U1s.
I know, but two of them are being different than the other.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to separate. Right? And so, there's a full SL4Z monodromy, which is not in play here. It's only SL2 processing.
All right. So it is this parameter, the one of the vibration over the base, that we are going to allow to be non-constant, and so it may have singularities, and again close to the singularities. The singularities. The U1 times U1 isometries are broken. So duality, if you wish, breaks down. And the solutions exist then only on the type 1 side. We will have some things to say about the pairing of the singularities, hopefully in the paper. What does supersymmetry determine for us? It determines the entire form of the solution except the warp factor. The warp factor also for type 2B solutions is never fixed by supersymmetry. So A is not determined. By supersymmetry, what determines the warp factor is the Bianchi identity. So that's my next point. I thought it was on my list. Okay, whatever. So I just have to invent a point 4.5. Bianchi identity, or maybe I just include it as part of 4. I think that works. Okay. So now we have to take this background and show that it also solves the Bianchi identity. And we are going to do this step by step. And I'm going to be sketchy. Okay, so let's first start showing that this background solves the Bianchi identity at the level of supergravity. So in supergravity, we know that the type 1 flux F3 prime is going to satisfy the Bianchi identity, just the F is equal to 0. So that's supergravity. So the reason for this is that in general, for type 2 theories, so the definition that I'm using for the Ramon-Ramon field strength is this one. So it includes, so this is in type 2b. So in type and had to be, right? So and so in order to get the Bianchi identity on the type 1 set, what we do is to start with an equation for the phi form. So this is a six-form equation that has two components in the fiber directions. We dualize twice in the fiber directions, and we transform this into an equation that is a four-form. Now, once we do our duality chain, the Neville-Schwarz field on the type 1 side has to vanish, right? Because type 1 doesn't have a Neville-Schwarz field. So this means that after we apply the dualities, what we get is simply F3. Prime is equal to dc2 prime, and this part vanishes because there's no Neville-Schwarz field for type 1, so df3 prime is simply equal to 0. So that's the Bianchi identity. So that is supposed to be a differential equation for the warp factor, and easy enough, one can take the result for f3 prime I showed a moment ago and simply work it out, right? So one takes d, and so what does one find? So working out the details, one finds the differential equation. Equation for the warp factor one finds is schematically the following. Laplace acting on e to the minus 4a plus, let me simply denote this with h square. So this is the type to be so we do this computation just on the type 1 side, but this arises from the twist of the fiber. So the Neville-Schwarz field is encoded in the twist of the fiber. So this is the type to be NS flux. Right? So for people that have worked in flux compactifications, one recognizes this immediately as the warp factor equation, right? So this is the warp factor equation type to B is the type to B warp factor equation. Again, there are typical no-go theorems that say if we try to solve this equation without D brains or without sources, then we cannot find a solution because there's a plus sign and there's a square here. So this means that one needs to include sources. Now, but that's not the Bianchi identity we want to solve. We want to solve something that is, of course, more complicated than this.
You haven't told us yet what spit 32 mod Z2 gauge bundle you're going to have, right?
I'm not worrying about gauge bundles. I've told you it's zero. So we.
I was like, you said you were not going to worry about the gauge bundle?
Yeah, so I'm not going. So for this talk, I'm not going to include any gauge fields.
So you're assuming the bundle is trivial?
Yeah.
But that might or might not be the case from your duality, right?
Okay.
Basically, it is. But at the fluxes, you end up with unbroken spin 32 mod Z2 in this duality chain.
That again depends on what kind of orientable plane you
have. Well, that's true.
Good. So I don't think it's going to be complicated to include it. So it's an extensive story over here.
Let me rephrase it. Yep. So now you've told me what kind of orientable planes you have.
Okay. All right. That's good.
Or I've told you.
Or you've told. Okay. All right. So that's not the Bianchi identity we want to solve. What we want to solve is more complicated. It looks like this. So beyond supergravity, and here I'm going to be sketchy since I want to discuss one case in great detail. So what we want to solve is this Bianchi identity. But Not that this equation is very complicated, because it involves, so the left-hand side we sort of know, right? So I explained how F3 prime looks like. But the right-hand side involves this curvature 2 form, so it's a four-derivative thing, and implicitly it contains also F3 prime, right? So it's going to be a very complicated differential equation, or at least one could suspect that naively. But the main point of our analysis is to show that this is actually not the case. This is a linear differential equation. So for the backgrounds that I'm just described, I'm going to be sketchy. And what I'm going to say is that one can always solve this equation in a perturbative expansion. One can solve this equation in a perturbative expansion. But what perturbative expansion could there be? So we know, for example, we need a modulus in order to do that. We know that in type 2b, we always solve equations for the warp factor or whatever equations of motion we want to solve. We solve those in large volume. Now, on the type 2b side, we have a continuous family of solutions labeled by the size of the internal space, right? Now, the dualities I presented do not destroy moduli. This means that also the type 1 background is going to have a modulus. Let me call this L. So that corresponds. So L is the modulus which is, if you want, mirror to the size, to the 2B size. It's going to correspond to a large base, a small fiber, it's going to shift the dilaton, so it's going to do different things on the type 1 side than it does in type 2b, but it is a continuous parameter. And in terms of this parameter, we can solve this differential equation, and let me just quote the results, so it's not difficult to derive this, but I want to discuss the K3 case in more detail. One can show that this differential equation reduces to e to the minus 2, oops, excuse me, for A plus H squared times the volume form on the base is equal to alpha prime divided by 4 trace R of the base, which R of the base, plus stuff that is subleading in the L expansion. This means that in this L expansion, what is mirror to the size, this reduces to a differential equation, or to this is a four form that just living on the base, and it involves the warp factor simply with a Laplacian in front. So it's a Laplace equation for the warp factor that we can always solve, right? So over here on the type 2B side, we need, for example, 7 branes in order to obtain contributions like this, or all planes. On the type 1 side, those contributions are always there, so to say. So this can always be solved. Now, one could... one could ask, for example, so this is how the differential equation looks like in the L expansion, but it turns out to be the case that this equation, the type 1 Bianchi identity, contains much more information than the warp factor equation in type 2B. Namely, it contains actually corrections to the warp factor equation in type 2B, and those are the topic of my next point over here, where I want to discuss those corrections to the warp factor equation for backgrounds with an n equal to 2 supersymmetry. And you are going to see how the corrections to that background that preserves n equal to 2 supersymmetry look like. So, K3 base, or I could also call this the Bianchi identity, beyond leading order. Okay, So what I would like to do now is the following. I want to construct, so all the solutions I've talked about until now have n equal to 1 supersymmetry. Now I want to consider a case with n equal to 2 supersymmetry. And the base is going to be K3. So then I want, so the supersymmetric background is not new, but what I want to show is how to solve this differential equation. Until now I've worked on the type 1 side, I can also work, now I'm going to work on the heterotic side. So there's going to be a metric that is going to be rescaled compared to the type 1 metric. Because we are performing an S-duality, so this is K3 base. There's going to be a fiber that is twisted, so these are field bind in the fiber directions. So E is simply dWk plus BYIWk. So let's see K being equal to 1 or 2. So it's the same, actually completely the same background as the one I described a moment ago. But we could also actually forget the previous background and simply say, imagine we are given this background on the heterotic side. Can we include flux? Is there a notion where we can say, can we add to a certain background flux? And that's the way to do that. So what we have to do is to pick a certain, two form, right? So H. WK is going to be a certain two form. That is the WK YI. Or I can also say WK. So how does one include flux in this background? Well, what we are going to do is to simply pick a two form that is non-trivial on the base, so it's an harmonic two form on the base, and then we write it locally as the derivative of a potential, and the twisting of the fiber is going to make this two form then trivial on the entire space. It's going to become exact because this form over here has to be globally defined. To solve supersymmetry, we modify the metric by including this B field. So in order for supersymmetry still to be solved, what we have to do is then also to include H flux. And we have to include a dilaton, minus 2a. Okay, now, depending on the choice of flux over there, we can have different amounts of supersymmetry, so HW, the complex combination of HW1 minus IHW2. So we are mainly interested in the backgrounds that preserve an n equal to 2 supersymmetry. So in this case, that two form has to be a primitive 1-1 form on the base. So this preserves an n equal to 2 supersymmetry. So this is an old story. And if it's depending on the choice of flux, one can also realize an n equal to 1 and n equal to 0 supersymmetry. Now, why do I want to focus on the case with n equal to 2 supersymmetry? Because there we will see that we can nicely solve the Bianchi identity, and we can understand the quantum corrections to this background. Oh. 15 minutes. What? 15 minutes. Oh, nothing I can do. if I just wouldn't have erased this, because it would actually be more useful to just leave it here. Minus star base. Okay, I think that's going to be better. Good. So we want to show that this background satisfies this differential equation. So in principle, it looks very scary because the right-hand side contains four derivatives and could be nonlinear. Also, we are talking about the heterotic side, so I'm actually talking about H. Now, so the best way to solve this differential equation is to start computing the right-hand side. So it turns out that this object, so there is no trick for this. It's a very long computation and simply has to be done. So trace. But what I want to emphasize, it's very important to choose what I call over here the omega plus connection. So that is going to be trace R of K3, which R of K3 minus 4 plus 4 D star with respect to the base D. Delta square of the warp factor. Now, so then there are additional contributions, but as I'm going to explain in a moment, they are subleading in the alpha prime expansion because they are proportional to leading order equations of motion. Okay, so looks in principle like a very complicated differential equation, except the left-hand side we know. Now I'm really going to erase this, sorry. So the left-hand side we know, at least to leading order and alpha prime, right? So I just wrote it up over here. So that's dH. That is going to be dH is equal to d star with respect to the base e to the minus 4a minus hwi, which star hwi, plus what I'm going to allow here is a correction of the background to order linear in alpha prime. Now remember that the supersymmetry transformations only receive corrections to order alpha prime square. This means whatever correction I add over here to the background, it will have to satisfy the leading order supersymmetry conditions. Now, leading order supersymmetry does not determine the warp factor, and this means I'm allowed to shift the warp factor without breaking supersymmetry, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. Namely, there is going to be a background where the warp factor is shifted to a new one. And this is good that I left the formulas over here. There's going to be a background with a new warp factor that includes two primes, where a prime e to the minus 4a prime is equal to e to the minus 4a prime plus alpha prime times second derivative acting on the warp factor. So that's the definition. So this background is supersymmetric. And moreover, this correction to order alpha prime cancels exactly the four derivative contribution.
Can you erase one of the primes there?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Good. So the background receives a correction to linear order in alpha prime. The Bianchi identity then simply reduces to, again, to an equation of Laplace type for the warp factor A. So just because it's pretty, just write it up. So there has been some rumors that backgrounds are to show the existence of torsional backgrounds or of flux backgrounds for heterotic strings, one has to solve a nonlinear differential equation like this. It's very crucial, well, that turned out to be not true, because it's very crucial, at least for this background, to use the right connection over here in order to show that the warp factor equation is, or the equation for the scalar functions of Laplace type. Yes?
So you told us that the warp factor determines the dilaton here, no?
Yes.
Because we also know that there are regions where one factor becomes large.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So basically, in these regions, how do you deal with them?
Well, I mean, there is, okay, good. That differential equation, it actually has a constant piece, right? So the Dirac is going to be identified with this, but it has a constant piece, and it's that constant piece that is going to determine the string coupling constant. So that's an additive constant, a free parameter.
So it's not that the perturbation series will break down because it has a large.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and that's actually all I wanted to say. Questions?
Can you do this chain of dualities for, say, Klebanov-Strassler?
What? That?
For Klebanov-Strassler.
Oh.
I'm just curious what you get in there.
That's a good question. So you would take some kind of deformed conifold, maybe?
Yeah, because that's one of the simplest things, you know, one has in type 2B.
What is that?
Yeah, I mean, do we know that the semi-flat approximation works there?
Well, I mean, it works as long as it's elliptically fibered, right? I mean, it's one interesting question, for example, so we have done this for a T2 fibration, come and do it for a T3 fibration, so for a maybe more general type of background, right? So that is something that, I mean, one could try, for example. I mean, Strassler, so doesn't seem to have an elliptic fibration, but to do it beyond those examples that are elliptically fibered, that's a good question.
I don't see any further questions, so thank you.